The Y-Files releases an informative analysis of Sumerian historical records of the Anunnaki. The weaponization of artificial intelligence in the Gaza war is a big problem, as the United Nations Secretary General rightly points out. George Adamski photos and videos of UFOs are among the best UFO evidence ever provided. Some members of the US Congress still support UFO transparency despite official pushback. Russia's secret space program and its enigmatic Psi-Corps and non-human civilizations. Professor R.B. Loeb speculates that extraterrestrials may be able to visit Earth through dimension-hopping technologies. These stories and more on Exopolitics Today, the Week in Review.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Well, this is Exopolitics Today, the Week in Review for April 13. It's been a very interesting week. The eclipse, the big eclipse, came and went, and the Earth is still here. No major developments, although the eclipse was quite a sight to see. I haven't seen anything in terms of major sightings of objects, but definitely a lot of people got to focus on the sky, and that does always provide an opening of consciousness, and hopefully we see some big changes over the months ahead. So let's go to some of the stories I want to cover for this week in review. Again, going to my X feed, formerly known as Twitter. I do tweets or X's on a regular basis, and that's what I'm going to be looking at for the week in review. So I want to begin by this tweet where I discuss the Y-Files, which is a very popular YouTube channel, and they do release a lot of analyses of high strangeness, UFO, anomalous types of topics. And in this case, they did a special on the Sumerian historical records. And it was done very well. I thought it was a very informative and very kind of entertaining analysis of all of the different perspectives on the Anunnaki, and especially the work of Zechariah Sitchin, discussing things that he got wrong as well as things that he got right. And I think when it comes to the Anunnaki, because it is a very important topic, because, you know, we're looking at these beings, the extraterrestrials or the gods, as the ancient Sumerians discussed them, who in that era were really kind of like the way people today, whether it's in Christianity or Judaism or in Islam, you know, they talk about Jesus, they talk about God, they talk about the prophets, they discuss Muhammad or Allah or the Buddha, Krishna. For the Sumerians, their pivotal religious figures were these Anunnaki. And so it's worth knowing a little bit about them and getting it right. And Zechariah Sitchin, he did get many things wrong. And so the Y-Files kind of did point that out. And there is a book that I've mentioned a few times, which is Matthew LaCroix's The Stage of Time, which really is, to my mind, today the kind of probably the most authoritative book on the Anunnaki history that I've found out there, that it analyzes the key Sumerian texts and provides a very informed analysis of who the Anunnaki are, because it is important, because just as in Christian, Hebrew, and Islamic traditions, you get the positive beings, the gods, whether we're talking Jesus, Muhammad, But you also get the negative beings, Satan or Lucifer or Iblis, these beings that are discussed as negative or the demonic class. So you get a description of the different beings. And what Matthew LaCroix points out is that the Anunnaki did have different factions, and primarily these two factions focused on Enlil, the sky god, or the god of kind of thunder, the space fleet. And that was Enlil. Enlil, the sky god, the master of the space fleet. And then you had Enki, the lord of the earth, the master of the oceans, whose symbol was the serpent, whereas for Enlil, his symbol was the eagle. And so the way LaCroix describes it, when you look at Sumerian records, you have this battle between the eagle faction and the serpent faction. And of course, in Judaism and Christianity, you have a faction between, say, Jesus or the prophets or Yahweh, and you have this, and then you have the other side, which would be described as, say, Lucifer and Satan. And that becomes significant because for the Anunnaki, they did have entities that we would regard as kind of negative in that, but also, of course, entities that were very positive. So Matthew LaCroix, he kind of spells that out, and well worth taking a look at that. Now, regarding Nibiru, Zechariah Sitchin discussed Nibiru as this rogue planet that needed gold to repair its damaged atmosphere. So that's the explanation in Zechariah Sitchin's interpretations of Sumerian literature. Now, I think that it's more likely that Nibiru, rather than being a rogue planet, was probably a artificial planetoid or a spacecraft or a mothership that served as the foundation for the Anunnaki to travel back and forth between their home star system and our solar system. So well worth taking a look at that Y-Files video. Here's something that I think is very significant, and that is the use of artificial intelligence in the Gaza war. Now, apparently, one of the protagonists, that is Israel, has given artificial intelligence a role in identifying potential targets and playing a role in the, not just the targeting, but also in the kind of execution of those targets in the Gaza war. Now, this is something that the United Nations Secretary General points out is a very significant problem, that countries that use artificial intelligence in military operations, I think, are really giving AI a example of how to behave in a way that is going to result in a Terminator-type future. And I think for those people that have been discussing artificial intelligence for some time now, they do warn about this possible Terminator-type future. I mean, I did interview David Adair, and he did describe the danger of a Terminator future as opposed to what we would like, which would be something more along the lines of data in the Star Trek series, a friendly AI that's wanting to push the boundaries of learning and consciousness as opposed to the Terminator type. And I suspect that artificial intelligence does reflect the consciousness of its creators. So if its creators use artificial intelligence in a way like the Terminator, of using that to go down the path of using AI weapons or weapons that are controlled by AI, then AI will learn to do that. Whereas if a society uses AI for positive human quality of life enhancement, then the AI will learn to do that. And I think that's a very important principle. And so I fully agree that there really needs to be an effort to stop the use of AI in warfare, that the weaponization of AI in warfare really is training AI to do things that ultimately could lead to this Terminator future. So definitely there need to be curbs on that. Okay, George Adamski, photos and videos of UFOs. These have been something that I've long been interested in. You know, when I got involved in the UFO field back in 2001, 2002, I was really mystified about the George Adamski case. Why here was a case that was so strong in terms of photos, videos, corroborating witnesses, even physical evidence of what was going on, but yet the UFO community were debunking it. I mean, the people that you would think would be most supportive, that is UFO researchers, were very antagonistic towards Adamski, not just Adamski, but other contactees of that era, Howard Menger, George Van Tassel, Orfeo Angelucci, these people that to varying degrees had very interesting information, some supporting witnesses, data and so forth, but they were universally reviled by a lot of UFO researchers who wanted to promote ufology as a science. And it was really, I think for many UFO researchers, and that continues to today, you know, they want to make the study of UFOs a science, just like astronomy or physics or chemistry, where you have a lot of data, a lot of hypotheses, which are evaluated through data and testing and so forth. Whereas anyone that pays attention to UFOs knows that, well, this is not a scientific problem. It's more a kind of like a phenomenon that involves people interacting with these craft in some way. So this is why a lot of UFO researchers don't want to look at the evidence or the testimonies of people like George Adamski. Now, in this case, I interviewed Glenn Steckling, who is the son of Fred Steckling. Now, Glenn Steckling, he was an airline captain. I think he served for 30 years for some major airlines. Yeah, 30 years for some major airlines. And he, in the early 1960s, when he was only like 4 years old, got to meet with Adamski because his father befriended Adamski. And his father eventually became the custodian of a lot of George Adamski's files and records and photos and videos. And so when his father died, Glenn Steckling continued to do the work of his father, and he's accumulated a very impressive amount of data on the Adamski case. And it is well worth looking at because those photos were taken in the 1950s, early 1950s, way before Photoshop and so forth. And, you know, they showed all types of spacecraft entering and leaving the Earth, in the orbit of the moon and so forth. And, you know, this was very compelling testimony or very compelling evidence for Adamski's claims that he was in touch with these extraterrestrials, presumably from Venus, or that's where they claimed to be from. So we talked about that in the interview. Now, Glenn Steckling, he is kind of skeptical when it comes to claims of other non-human extraterrestrial, which I found to be rather strange, to be honest. I thought that is something that's almost like a no-brainer. If you're interested in this phenomenon that people are reporting interactions with these grey-looking extraterrestrials or reptilian-looking extraterrestrials, insectoids and so forth. But Steckling was really not supportive of that. That was, I thought, very interesting. So we disagreed about that, but nevertheless, we had a conversation about it. And I do plan to have him back on Exopolitics Today, and we'll discuss some of the other claims concerning Adamski, which I thought really do need to be looked at, which is, you know, was Adamski truly having contact with these extraterrestrials from Venus, as he claimed, or were these extraterrestrials in fact Germans from Antarctica claiming to be from Venus, as some people believe? So that is something we will discuss in future, as well as some of the other contactee cases that Glenn Steckling believes are authentic. So definitely I will be having him back on the show. Okay, so here's something I discussed, and this concerns what really is a veiled attack on Elena Danan, as we all know, is, or if you've been following my work, is a former archaeologist from France, and she has been putting out a lot of information about human-looking extraterrestrials of the Galactic Federation, and also discussing the return of Enki or Ea. Now, what I have found really curious was Corey Goods, someone that I have worked with in the past and did respect very much in the past, and he had phenomenal information and generated quite a big following. But he has gone through a change, a transition, where he is now feeling that it is important to attack people that disagree with the narrative that he's putting out. And the narrative he's putting out, actually, I'm not quite sure what it is now, because it's very different to when I did work with him. But he is very critical of the idea of these angelic human-looking extraterrestrials. He's very critical of the idea of a galactic federation of worlds that is here to help us. And he's very critical of the idea of Enki Ea being a positive force to help us. And what's even more strange is that he is somehow tying it up with Satanism, and he's using these allusions to Satanism to say that, well, you know, all this information that is coming out, and it's a veiled attack. He doesn't explicitly mention Elena Danan by name, but it's clear that he's referring to her, that this is all associated with Satanism, and he cites some strange group that I never heard of before that apparently is discussing Enki or Ea and also discussing the Galactic Federation of Worlds. Well, you know, to me, that doesn't prove anything about the Galactic Federation of Worlds, because, I mean, you have Satanism is a very real thing. It does happen. There are groups out there that practice it. But, I mean, Satanists will use some historic religious figures as part of their traditions, their rituals. I mean, like John the Baptist, the head of John the Baptist. I mean, that is used by the Skull and Bone Society, which we could include among this Satanist group. So, you know, would you say that John the people that support the truth of John the Baptist are supporting Satanism? I mean, Jesus. I mean, the sacrifice of Jesus, the blood sacrifice of Jesus in communion and so forth, or the cross and the resurrection. I mean, Satanists refer to this, and I think this is part of the process that groups like Satanists pursue, which is that they do use traditional religious figures or beings that have some force or some power behind them, and they twist that in terms of their practices. So somehow, in Corey Good's mind, because there are some groups out there that appropriate the language of Enki and Ea and maybe appropriate the language of the Galactic Federation of Worlds and human-looking extraterrestrials, that somehow the people who advocate for those are veiled Satanists, and it's his mission to expose them. I mean, it's really bizarre, and I don't know what's gotten into Corey. I mean, he's very different to when I worked with him. He is really, I guess, I don't know why he's attacking Elena Danan, why he feels that her work is a target for him. Maybe I'm really confused over why he's doing this, because there's no sane reason for it. She has shown in the 3 years that I've been working with Elena, she's shown no sign of any of this, that he's kind of making accusations of against her support of Enki, the Galactic Federation of Worlds. So yeah, it's very bizarre. I mean, and all I can think of is that there was a public smearing campaign that was launched against Elena Danan by the Deep State, and this has been exposed by an inventor by the name of Dave Rossi, and he identified the corporation behind it, the Aerospace Corporation, and he said that this corporation has begun a public dissemination campaign they're closely monitoring all of Elena Danan's activities, and they are trying to smear her. Now, I know Corey Good does have some inside contacts. Now, whether these people are associated with the Aerospace Corporation, I don't know for sure. I can only speculate, but certainly his smearing of Elena Danan by these kinds of really bizarre accusations really do suggest that he may have been co-opted, and I would not dismiss that possibility. But for those of you that are wanting to know, well, is there any evidence supporting Elena Danan's claims? Because there's absolutely none supporting what Corey Good has had to say about Elena Danan. Here's an article by Dan Willis, and he accumulates quite an extensive series of corroborations of things that Elena Danan was told by her Galactic Federation of Worlds contacts about events in the Earth. I mean, for example, here Thorhan said something about Neptune, and a few days later NASA releases a report about some anomaly on Neptune. Thorhan says something to Elena that is released about severe quakes on Mars that are part of the liberation effort. And then a week later, NASA reports the largest quake ever. Now, you can say, well, this is all circumstantial evidence, but nevertheless, it's evidence in support of what Elena Danan is saying. So, yeah, that Dan Willis article, well worth exploring in depth if you're still sitting on the fence about the accuracy of her work. Okay, so here is something that I thought was very interesting. There's a Congressman Robert Garcia who's wanting more hearings on UFOs to be held, and that the Republican leadership is being kind of lobbied by members of Congress such as Garcia, saying that there should be more hearings. Now, unfortunately, there is a lot of pressure being put on these pro-UFO disclosure representatives in the House of Reps and, of course, and the US Senate. And what's emerged is that many of these members of Congress have been pressured by unnamed officials to back off. I mean, a week ago, my last week in review, I talked about Congressman Tim Burchett being approached and being told to back off, you know, not to pursue UFO transparency because people will riot if they learn the truth. And I think if people did learn the full truth, they probably would riot, because you'd be really pissed off that for decades you've got a secret space program with free energy, that you've got an underground levitation system of trains and public transportation that can go from coast to coast in like 30 minutes, or go from one side of the planet to the other in an hour, that people would be shocked and angry about that. But that's exactly what's been happening. So, you know, I think there's some truth to this. People would be angry, and those that are responsible for it are wanting to slow walk this whole disclosure process. So this is happening behind the scenes. For decades now, members of Congress are being approached. Back in 2001, I remember when I got interested in the phenomenon, that I asked some of the people associated with the Disclosure Project, you know, what's happening with your the U.S. Congress, and they were saying, yeah, there are members of Congress that are supportive of getting the kind of testimonies that Stephen Greer was bringing out discussed in Congress and to have hearings on it, but that these members of Congress were being approached silently by men in black, unnamed public officials, and told to back off, and were being threatened. And it's like the carrot and the stick. You know, if you don't play ball with these groups, then your congressional career is threatened. You'll be primaried. You'll be booted out of Congress. If you comply, if you cooperate, then you've shown that you're a team player and you get promoted. And one of these people was Congressman Sylvester Reyes. I can say this now. I was told this by a Disclosure Project supporter, advocate, that Sylvester Reyes was very interested in the testimony of these witnesses that Stephen Greer got back in around 2001. And Sylvester Reyes wanted to explore, wanted to hold hearings. He was approached, he was threatened, and he backed off. He backed off, and as a result, he was then promoted to become I believe it was the chair of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. So that's the way the system works, unfortunately, and that is happening now. But there are a few members of Congress, such as Robert Garcia and also Tim Burchett, Anna Luna, a very small handful of them, who are discussing putting out this information concerning UFOs and wanting to have hearings on this. So here's an announcement on my next secret space program, which is going to be on this is an announcement on my next webinar, which is going to be on Russia's secret space program. I'm going to be looking at its, of course, the technologies that have been secretly developed by Russia behind the scenes, in terms of crash retrieval operations, in terms of what was secretly taken from Nazi Germany in the closing stages of World War II, also the existence of a psych corps, of an elite group of psychic warriors that the Soviet Union developed, and the non-human connection, that is that the Soviets and now the Russians were in connection with both visiting extraterrestrials and also inner Earth civilizations. So that's what I'm going to be discussing in my May 4 webinar. So that's just been announced. So there's plenty of time to register. And I look forward to talking about that, because this has been a topic that has long intrigued me, the Russia's secret space program. And I do plan in the future to do a book on this. So you can look forward to more on that, but definitely I hope you can join me for the webinar. Now, here is something that I thought was very, very relevant. The head of U.S. Space Command, General Stephen Whiting, says that Five Eyes nations, that is Australia, Canada, Britain, the United States, and New Zealand, along with Germany and France, are in the process of setting up Operation Olympic Defender that will optimize space operations. And so the ostensible targets are Russia and China, and their space-based activities, according to Whiting, are moving at a, quote, breathtaking speed. So this just shows why it's important that we learn more about what Russia and China have really developed in space in terms of secret space programs, and whether this kind of looming Star Wars that Stephen Whiting alludes to is coming. Is it real? Are we going to have a Star Wars where you have the United States and its allies battling against Russia and China, and its allies in space? Or is this just hype to generate more funding for space programs? Or is it preparation for what may be an attempt to organize an Earth Alliance or a Starfleet to deal with what in future may be the return of some extraterrestrials that are not very supportive of Earth's development as a civilization? So here are the highlights from my last webinar, the Crypto Terrestrials, and it's well worth looking at the crypto terrestrials. That I use that term to mean non-human intelligence that lives in the inner Earth. Now, there are also human intelligence that live in the inner Earth, and I have discussed those in the past. So this webinar, I just focused on the beings that are non-human in appearance, whether we're talking about the ant people, reptilians, bird people, and of course the Sasquatch. So if you weren't able to watch the webinar, well, here are the highlights from it. So it's a 25 minutes, so it'll give you a good idea of what was discussed. And if you want to learn more, then you can just there's links there for you to, if you wanted to learn more. So here's a story from Professor R.V. Loeb, where he speculates that extraterrestrials may be able to visit the Earth through dimension-hopping technologies. And he's speculating that the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland does create this, that there are these kind of portals, dimension-hopping technologies that are made possible because the Large Hadron Collider is generating an environment, a possibility for this to happen. Now, to my mind, this is great that Loeb is trying to open up skeptical minds in the general public or in the scientific community to the possibility of dimensional portals being viable, that this actually may be a way in which advanced intelligences, extraterrestrials and so forth, are able to travel long distances, that interstellar travel might not necessarily be through faster than light travel using spacecraft, but that extraterrestrials may be able to use these interdimensional portals or dimension hopping technologies. Now, the thing is that this is precisely what eyewitnesses have been saying for decades now, going all the way back to the Montauk Project. Like in the 1990s, you had people from the Montauk Project, Preston Nichols, Al Bielek, Stuart Swerdlow and others discussing these kinds of portal technologies that have been used. And ever since, there have been others that have been saying that, yes, these portal technologies were developed at places like Montauk. And later on, you had other projects on Long Island. Long Island does have a particle accelerator. So it seems that these particle accelerators can create the conditions for these dimensional portals to appear. And of course, later on, you had the Large Hadron Collider being developed. So I think that this is kind of like a process of opening up people to what's going on. And R.V. Loeb is presenting that. But of course, you know, this is nothing new for those that have been following the literature on all of the eyewitnesses. But for those in the scientific community that, you know, just want to stick to hard evidence and empirical evidence, you know, this is genuinely new to them. So yeah, so this is a positive development that this kind of information is being presented now as a viability, because I think it is absolutely right that extraterrestrials have developed both faster than light technology to get here from distant star systems. And also you do have these dimension hopping or space-time portals that they're able to use, that this is definitely what's been going on. So here's something about the U.S. Space Force Chief of Space Operations, General Chance Saltzman, and he met in Colorado Springs with the space chiefs of 18 other allied nations in Colorado Springs. And they put out a joint statement. And so here you have them, 18 nations. There's the list. Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, the Republic of Korea, Spain, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and the United States. So they released a joint statement. So it's not a long statement, so let me read it out. We reaffirm that enhanced cooperation among like-minded partners is vital to adapt to the rapidly emerging opportunities and threats in, from, and to space. So this is all about building an alliance among the Earth's major spacefaring nations to deal with future threats from space. So the statement continues. We have a shared interest in maintaining the peaceful use of outer space and the benefits of space for humankind. So this is an allusion to the Artemis Accords, which currently stands, I think it's 36 nations have signed the Artemis Accords, and that's where you actually have these major spacefaring nations that want to develop space technologies to be able to be used in space for peaceful uses and the benefits of space for humanity. And for a lot of these major space nations, that means space tourism, that means the commercialization of space, that means the kind of scientific exploration of space. And it goes on. We will continue working together to deter ambiguous, unfriendly, or hostile activities in space. So here they're alluding to China, Russia, and possibly extraterrestrials or non-human intelligence that have a presence in space. And we also emphasize our resolve to continue promoting mutually agreed norms and responsible behaviors in space, including by conducting space activities in a manner that prioritizes the safety, security, stability, and sustainability of the space domain. So here you have 18 nations, or the space chiefs of 18 nations meeting with the head of the United States Space Force, all saying that they're going to collaborate in creating a space domain where the safety, security, and stability and sustainability of space for all of these major nations. So when you look at this, I think what it points to it's laying the groundwork for two interrelated processes that is happening right now. So the first process is the creation of a Star Trek future. Now, I've mentioned this in the past. A Star Trek future is something that was officially embraced as the doctrine of the United States Space Command in 2019. And that the United States Air Force Space Command in 2019, there was a Space Futures Workshop, and that was put out. This Star Trek future was adopted as the optimal scenario that Space Command, that belonged at that time to the US Air Force, but was later incorporated as the main foundation for the United States Space Force. So Chance Saltzman has inherited that kind of priority, where there's going to be an attempt to create a Star Trek future. And that this is going to involve the combination of the space forces of allied space commands. And so this is where you get a combined space operations, which is going to become something similar to a Star Trek future, especially the Starfleet, as it was described. The second process is the stealth unveiling of a U.S. Navy-run multinational secret space program called Solar Warden. That's going to be rolled out as something that's new, because I think this is the big problem, is how do you present to the public a space program that's been in existence since the late 1970s that's gone by various names. One of the early names was Solar Warden. Some people have called it Radiant Guardian. And there have been other names attributed to this U.S. Navy-run secret space program, which has been a multinational space program for decades. So here you have, beginning in the late 1970s and the late and early 1980s, the development of a U.S. Navy-run secret space program that has, over the years, over the decades, incorporated more and more nations: Britain, Australia, Canada, later on France, Germany, Japan, Russia have all collaborated with this multinational U.S. Navy-run secret space program. So how do you unveil that? How do you present that to the public? Well, you're going to present that in a way that makes it look new. Because if you say, well, since the late 1970s and 80s, we've had this secret space program, and here it is, everyone, we need to disclose it to you. You know, there's going to be a lot of very uncomfortable questions. But if you present it as something new, look what we've developed now, thanks to our partners in the aerospace industries, we have these brand new cigar-shaped craft that can operate as space carriers. We have fleets of flying triangles and flying saucers and even rectangle-shaped craft that have all been developed by our friends such as Lockheed Martin, such as Northrop Grumman, and that they're going to be mass-produced by corporations such as SpaceX and the Blue Origin. And so you have this kind of grand alliance of different corporations, legacy corporations, that built this stuff in the 70s and 80s, and then newer corporations like SpaceX and Blue Origins and so forth that are going to be rolling out new generations of this. So everyone's going to be like, oh, this is fantastic. We're going to build out fleets of these craft. But in fact, what you're doing is you're just unveiling stuff that's been in operation for decades. So I think that's really the agenda. Okay, so here is a webinar that Alana Dinan did on the great mothers of humanity, where she talks about these different Anunnaki goddesses, even though they didn't use that term. Namu is the mother of both Enki and Enlil. Inanna, one of the grandchildren of Enlil that eventually got to support Enki and Ea. Ninhursag is the one of the key Anunnaki figures that got to work with Enki in the seeding of humanity. And this is a fascinating webinar in terms of laying out the history of the Anunnaki, especially when it comes to these leading females and the roles that they played. And the Anunnaki had factions. And I've already spoken about these different factions. The Enlil faction was the faction that was pretty kind of antagonistic towards humanity in terms of it being a kind of independent race of beings that would grow and evolve in terms of spirituality to one day be able to rival the Anunnaki themselves. That Enlil wanted nothing to do with that. That all he wanted was a race of beings that would be slaves, that could work the mines and provide other menial labor that the Anunnaki wanted. And so he was the leader of one faction that wanted to exploit humanity. So for some, you might consider him to be kind of like a negative type being, whether we're talking about Lucifer, whether we're talking about a satanic element. Some might say, well, that was Enlil. But it's much more complicated. I mean, I think this whole binary thing of like, you have Jehovah or the God of light, and then you have Satan or Lucifer, the god of darkness. I mean, that's a binary, simplistic way of understanding this very complex factional struggle that happened in the Anunnaki history. I mean, this kind of binary thinking came from the Manichaean kind of interpretation of history. Zoroastrianism talked about the god of light and the god of darkness. I think it's more complex than that. And unfortunately, Christians or those that follow the Hebrew faith or the faith of Islam, they do have this kind of binary thinking. But I think what Elena Danan did in her webinar is lay out the different factions that were involved. And these factions were fluid. They would shift. For example, Inanna was the granddaughter of Enlil. And she just realized that, well, and the way Enlil wanted to treat humans and what he was doing was not in something that she would agree with. And so she supported what Enki and what Ninhursag were doing, or Ninma. And that Namu realized that Enlil was really a power monger, that he was someone that wanted to work with the Draconians to build an empire, and that he wanted to really work with the Draconians to kind of like steal or to take over the empire that Anu had built in Orion and in the Sirius star system. So really, I mean, these binary terms don't really do justice to these shifting factional struggles between the Anunnaki. And the bottom line here is that the Anunnaki are back, but not all of them are back. And this is the problem for a lot of Christians and Muslims and Hebrews, Jews. How do you deal with the return of this positive faction of the Anunnaki? Now, a simplistic mindset is that, well, you know, it's the return of Satan and his hordes, and that's just ridiculous. These are beings of great wisdom and great technology, and they can help humanity evolve. Now, some were involved with the subjugation of humanity. That is the Enlil faction. The Marduk faction were involved in the subjugation, and some of them were involved with these beings that we might consider to be very dark. But there were other factions in the Anunnaki that were very supportive of human freedom and human evolution. So we need to learn about this. We need to educate ourselves about these. And I think there, while Zechariah Sitchin did present this, there were so many problems in what he was doing. I think we really need to go beyond Zechariah Sitchin and look at other scholars such as Matthew LaCroix, Billy Carson. I think he also does has put out a lot of good information about the Anunnaki. We need to look at those sources that present the full picture rather than kind of fear-mongering and getting people to get scared over these really half-baked ideas about Enlil and Enki being respective light bearers versus bearers of darkness, that in fact what you had was beings, very highly evolved beings. Some were in favor of creating a slave society, some were in favor, such as the Enki-Ea faction, of helping humanity grow to reach its fullest potential. And so we need to be discerning, we need to educate ourselves rather than go down this path of fear-mongering, because ultimately, those that promote a fear agenda, they want to manipulate. Those that promote hope and growth and optimism for the future, they are the ones that are trying to expand our consciousness. And this is what Elena Danan does. She wants to expand our consciousness because she wants us to embrace the truth about these different factions out there that are wanting to introduce humanity to these incredible possibilities that lie before us if we make the choice, the right choice of working with these beings or groups such as the Galactic Federation of Worlds, the Ashtar Command, the Council of Nine, and so forth, as opposed to those that want to kind of railroad us into some kind of fear-based future where we are going to be wiped out through some solar flares, through some micronovas, through cataclysmic earth changes, and what we can best hope for is on the other side of those destructive changes. I personally think that it's important that we embrace optimistic futures, that in embracing that, we help that to become something that manifests. And I think that's what she does in this webinar, looking at the great mothers of humanity. And each of these Anunnaki personages, goddesses, as they were known in the ancient world, are part of this process to help awaken humanity. And they're back. These beings are back. And they are going to be playing a role. Namu is not part of Nibiru, but Inanna and Ninhursag are part of the return of Nibiru. And so we need to kind of like study, develop discernment, understand Anunnaki history. And as I mentioned, Billy Carson, Matthew LaCroix, also you can look at people like and Elena Danan's information is very important here. There is also the book series, The Gods of Eden, that's been put out by an Australian researcher whose name just escapes me for some reason. I've interviewed him twice and it'll come to me in a moment. But nevertheless, the Gods of Eden series, Paul Wallace, that's it. I was blanking on Paul Wallace's name. Another person who does fine research. So look at the researchers. Look at the independent researchers that are not pushing out fear porn, that they are pushing out accurate information about history, about the Anunnaki, and how that informs the Christian and Hebrew worldviews today. So that's really all I wanted to do in terms of the Twitter feed from last week. Again, I think if you want to pursue all of this, if you want to find out the sources for this, just go to my Twitter feed, twitter.com/MichaelSala. You'll always remember to like, share, and subscribe to my feed, my Twitter feed, my YouTube feed. This is the best way of getting this information out there. And I look forward to coming back next week and doing this all again for you on April 20. So thank you for watching.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.